For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Good evening, everyone. So I'm very happy to have doing our talk this evening, Reverend Hogetsu Lori Belzer. Hogetsu was one of the founding members of Ancient Dragons Zengate and has been our Tenzo, or head of the kitchen, and also has been a member of the board. She's now our sewing teacher, and I want to take this opportunity to say a little bit about what that means. So Hogetsu has trained and is our teacher in sewing Buddha's robes. So that means either lay ordination rock shoes like Gary's wearing, or priest robes like Hogetsu and myself and Laurel are wearing. So just to say what that is, what that's about, we do offer here lay ordination ceremonies. And actually the rock shoe that Gary's wearing is a kind of smaller version and structure to the priest robe that that some of us are wearing. So it's not necessary that anybody does this. It doesn't mean that you're a better practitioner, but some of us find it helpful to do this ceremony. So lay ordination means taking refuge in Buddha Dharma Sangha and formally receiving the 16 Bodhisattva precepts. It also means receiving lineage papers, connecting the person receiving it to me and back to Suzuki Roshi and Dogen and Bodhidharma and back to Shakyamuni, Buddha. It also means receiving a Dharma name from me, as I did from my teacher. So Hogetsu's Dharma name, Hogetsu Kigen, is Jewel Moon, returning to the source. So various, it was a little bit like Native American names. And then also part of it is sewing a robe. So like the robes that Gary's wearing, or like these priest robes, these are hand-sewed, and Hogetsu knows how to teach people how to do that. So again, this is not something that anybody needs to do and to practice here. You don't have to be a Buddhist to practice here. But for some of us, we find it helpful. So if you're interested in that, that's available here, and you can speak to me if you're interested in lay ordination, if you've been practicing here a little while. So anyway, thank you for coming to talk to us this evening. Okay, so.
Thank you for inviting me in. Good evening to all you Bodhisattva dragons. Braving the Chicago weather to come and sit zazen together. It's always an auspicious thing, and I'm really grateful for everyone's practice. So lately, I've been reading and contemplating and talking about and putting some effort into this. Studying this book called The Hidden Lamp, which we are very fortunate to have available to us on copyright 2013, so really just shy of a couple years this thing's been around. This is stories from 25 centuries of awakened women, and we chanted the ancestors, the female lineage, tonight. How many have heard that before? So some of us have. I probably heard a version of that chanted maybe, I don't know, the late 90s, early 2000s. Actually, the person who wrote the foreword to this book, Norman Fisher, did a practice period with Linda Ruth Cutts at Green Gulch Farm, which is where some of that lineage was actually kind of unearthed and developed. But you know, it's been tradition in Zen monasteries and Zen practice centers for, I don't know, probably since sometime in, I don't know if like Indian Buddhists, ancient Indian Buddhists chanted lineages.
I don't think so.
Just maybe like Tang Dynasty China or something like that?
Yeah, so 800s in China.
Yeah, something like that.
Or maybe not even then, maybe 11th century.
Maybe 11th century, Song Dynasty or something after. So those were all males, right, in that lineage chart. And so there's actually been this kind of discovery in modern, I think, American Zen in particular, of the voices and the teachings of women, because women have been practicing since day one, since Buddha's time, with Buddha and with other Buddhists. But like in many other places, you know, sometimes for some reason they don't get a lot of airplay. So I'm interested in giving them some airplay. And I'm really grateful to Florence Kaplow and Susan Moon for putting together this edited volume. Many of you are probably aware of the great volumes of, and traditional Zen volumes of koans, right? Like the Book of Serenity, Blue Cliff Record, the Mumon Koan. So those are kind of ancient texts that have these kind of cases, like little teaching stories, and then there's a commentary on those teaching stories, and then sometimes commentaries upon the commentaries, and then, you know, Zen teachers have been making commentaries on those commentaries on commentaries for a long time. But it's, we haven't had that many stories that featured female Buddhist practitioners. But now we've got 100. So the way Florence and Suze Moon put this together, there's 100 little teaching stories and then a short commentary by a contemporary female Buddhist practitioner. And I find them kind of amazing and inspiring, probably because, you know, some of the old teaching stories that we have from the ancient Chinese texts feel very ancient to me sometimes and kind of inscrutable. But this has a flavor of today in our practice. And this is, you know, in Chicago right now, this is a flowering of Buddhism, you know, of practitioners that are kind of like lay practitioners, but, you know, we're practicing in our everyday lives. So we're really turning the Dharma wheel in a very interesting way. And so I feel that this book, The Hidden Lamp, has a lot to do with that kind of turning of Buddhism. Buddhism of the people, Mon. So I thought we'd look at one story today. And these are like super short, barely. This is like 2 pages, maybe 2 1/4 pages. So this is the very last story. And it is entitled Darlene Cohen's Skillful Means. And Tigan's smiling, right? Because I know Tigan knows Darlene.
Well, I did before she passed pretty well. And also Leslie, who gave this, I know, and very well, who gives the commentary. So.
And you're smiling because they're both amazing people, right?
Wonderful, wonderful women.
Unique, amazing people. So I have crossed paths with both of these women kind of briefly myself in my travels around San Francisco Zen Center. Darlene, I don't know, was Darlene around when Suzuki Roshi was alive? I think so.
I think just after Shiantoni came, yeah.
So a long time ago in the hippie days of San Francisco, Darlene and her, I guess her husband, showed up at Zen Center. And Darlene was always kind of known, as far as I can tell. I heard stories about her before I ever met her, as kind of a wild spirit. But at some point, I believe she was living at Green Gulch Farm in her early 30s, she contracted rheumatoid arthritis. Now, some of you may have experienced some discomfort when you sit zazen, but imagine how it feels for someone practicing to have crippling. And I mean, Darlene was ravaged and crinkled by this disease. By the time I met her, she moved very deliberately and slowly. I think she mentioned one time that it took her an hour to get out of bed in the morning just to move. And this is after she had this disease for many, many, many years. So this story is a story that one of her students must have relayed to Leslie or to Florence and Sue, that talks about, so not only did Darlene have this horrible arthritis, but also she then got cancer and had a pretty awful kind of chronic cancer for a while, until she died of it. But she still taught. And there's a lot of stories. You know, Douglas told this story from Matza right before he died. Zen teachers, like, they seem to, like, teach right up until the end. They just, they can't help themselves, you know. And so I think it's interesting, this, I'm inspired and moved by stories of teachers and how they're teaching right up until the end. So Darlene, this, I'll read this story. About 2 weeks before Surrey Darlene Cohen passed away, she was lying on the small sofa in her living room, and a few students were there with her. In true form, Darlene announced matter-of-factly, "I don't believe in karma or any of that shit." One of her students asked, great student, I don't know who it was, "If you don't believe in any of that, what do you believe in here on the threshold of life and death?" Without a moment's hesitation and with much laughter and delight, Darlene said, "I believe in skillful means, which means I'm willing to lie about anything." So, you know, here's this woman. I mean, there's some in this story where Leslie comments, you know, the drugs they gave her for chemotherapy, like, weren't compatible with the drugs for her arthritis, so she always had to, like, make this kind of trade-off, right? So here's this woman dying in this very kind of oddly sculpted body by these diseases. And she's still hanging out with her students and being playful and kind of outrageous and unique and who she is. So I think that that's, that in and of itself is a teaching, right? How do you be present and not hindered? You know, I mean, our physical bodies, you know, clearly she wasn't jumping around, dancing, although I'm sure she wished she could. But, you know, she was still hanging out with her students and till the end caring for them. But she brings up, and she does some outrageous stuff, right? Like, here's this, "I don't believe in karma or any of that shit." You know, and her student's like, okay. She must have taught students very well for a student to be present enough and say, okay, you're dying right now. What do you rely on? And she comes up with skillful means, which I think is, you know, the ultimate activity of enlightenment. You may have heard of this, most of y'all. It's a famous practice of the Bodhisattva, of people who want to care. But I think of upaya or skillful means as it is the fruit of enlightenment. It is how enlightenment manifests itself, how wisdom, you know, the wisdom that is the awareness that all beings, animate, inanimate, conceivable, inconceivable, our physical world, that we're all just great, just as who they are. We're all in this mess together. And out of that, you know, we want to help everyone realize their loveliness and can see, you know, deeply how our essential goodness is sort of obscured. You know, Darlene's body was hobbled by this illness, and she was a very beautiful woman, so it must have been hard to also be ravaged by such viciousness, physical viciousness. But, you know, we're all hobbled by the likely suspects, right, of our desires, our dislikes, and confusion that kind of ravage our own bodies, hearts, and minds. And skillful means, you know, is really, it's this way of relating to every person, every situation, to, you know, this book, to whatever we're interacting with, according to that unique manifestation, personalities, gifts, the hobbled qualities that we all have, relating to those things, the hurting parts of others, with the goal of encouraging us to see and manifest our kind of Buddha nature, you know, our true selves, our inconceivable true selves, you know. So Darlene was willing to do anything to help people realize that. And I think of it, you know, I've been spending a lot of time with my twin nieces as they've been born and have been growing up. And one of the things that I think is wonderful about children is that they're constantly developing, and they constantly are requiring us to meet them where they're at, right? But that development never stops, you know, in our spiritual development. You know, sometimes we're like babies and toddlers, and teachers, you know, have to kind of relate to us. Or, you know, we're all kind of beginning bodhisattvas, so we're all struggling to try to relate to each other according to adjust to the developmental level that we're all at. And, you know, someone like Darlene, their stuff doesn't get in the way of that. So they can actually, you know, really attain teachers who are working, and you can see this, you know, you'll see it in Taigen. They're adjusting to the situation. Like, I came in today and I said to Taigen, I said, what do you want to chant today? And I'm like, women ancestors. He's like, okay, no problem. It's not something we normally chant, but he could have been like, oh, I don't want to do that. But, you know, so there's this like adjusting. And maybe it was kind of snarky, maybe, or something like bold to say, let's just chant women ancestors because we're not doing the whole lineage. I don't know.
No, it's fine. It was fun.
but even if it wasn't, I have a feeling that you know, we can adjust to each other. And that doesn't always mean agreeing, you know, and it doesn't always mean getting it right, but it's an ability to play with each other. Maybe Darlene also meant I'm willing to play with everyone. Not so much lie, but in a way that I'm not trying to control and push an agenda. Although bodhisattvas might have a little bit of an agenda, just a tiny one, just to encourage the light of Buddha natures to shine. You know? Just a little. Baby agenda. They're willing to give it up. Like if somebody says, I don't want my light to shine. I want my Buddha nature to shine. I'll be like, okay, I'll pretend I don't see it.
Yes.
Because sometimes, you know, beings, we're just not ready for all that light. So maybe she was, you know, with her willingness to lie a little bit about anything. Even to lie to say, oh yeah, maybe you're not good enough to be a bodhisattva. Maybe you don't have any Buddha nature. If somebody needs to hear that, you know. Or give a little bit of, maybe Darlene like had like, I'll give you some sunglasses so you don't get blinded by your Buddha nature. Because the full-on Dharma experience is a little bit rough, you know. So we start to see how our desires and our dislikes and our confusion impact ourselves and others. And then we see how we're not really ready to give up all of that. You might say, oh yeah, I'll give that up. But the minute something comes along that might challenge you in a place, you go, well, no, actually, I don't want to give that up right now, which is just fine. It's like my toddler, my niece, they spend Mondays with me, so I'm kind of exhausted after running around for them for about 8 hours. And so when their dad came to pick them up, One of them was like, I can't wait to go home. The other one's like, I want to go. And she sat down and she was like crying. You know, I want to go. And she's screaming, you know. Her dad looks at me and is like, okay. And I said, if we go outside, we can go get some snow. You can play in some snow. She's like, okay. I was like, okay, that one, that's what she needed. The other one, though, just needed to walk down the stairs and go to her dad's arms. So there's always this adjustment that, you know, the world is checking us out to see, you know, can I be flexible and creative, adaptive, present, patient? Those are part of the qualities that contribute to skillful means, to the skillful means of encouraging people to be themselves. So that's sort of like this kind of, maybe there won't be many stories about Darlene, you know? It's the only one I know that's published like this. but this, it's good enough. So you could say this is maybe her death teaching. So I'll read Leslie's commentary. Now, Leslie herself is kind of amazing. Leslie James basically cares for Tassajara Zenon Monastery. Her and her husband technically do, but Leslie has been doing this for as long as I know, right?
Long time.
And that is quite a thing to ride herd on, that's all I can say. And her spirit is just like holds this community that's the jewel of Buddhism in America. And she's totally present and like kind of unflappable, but like, you know, you almost don't see her. So Leslie says, this koan is about my dear friend Darlene Cohen, who died January 12th, 2011. It's not that long ago. Exactly 1 year later, my granddaughter was born, and I thought, maybe it's Darlene coming back. But then, since I'm her grandmother and I have to watch her mother bring her up, I thought, I hope she's not too much like Darlene. She would be such a handful. I met Darlene in the mid-70s when I first came to San Francisco Zen Center. She was a really beautiful woman, vibrant and alive. Then in her early 30s, when her son was only 3 years old, she developed severe rheumatoid arthritis. Her hands and legs were deformed and crippled, though she was still beautiful and lively. Later, she developed cancer. Throughout all of it, she would say, I'm going to live my life completely. It's pretty good. That's another good teaching from her. I think she was surprised over time to find herself becoming a teacher. She had a lot of trust in her wisdom, but to actually feel herself being beneficial to people in a practice way surprised her. And as I watched her over the years, this came to be the most important thing to her, teaching people and helping people. She really studied how to make the Dharma available to people because she knew it had helped her so much. She did it in her own way, though, with her own skillful means. For instance, I remember when she and an old friend taught workshops, she would sometimes bring squirt guns, and they'd hide behind bushes on the path and squirt people as they walked by. So these old women, crippled, old women, gray hair, squirting people. It's kind of Darlene. Though there were many other stories about her as well. Her commitment to do whatever it took to teach continued right through her last illness. Then, even though she only had a couple of months to live, she still taught her students. In the last week of her life, when she was really weak, she even finished Dharma transmission for two of her students, which took a tremendous amount of time and energy. She was totally alive until the last minute, and also recognized what was happening. So in this koan, what does she mean when she says, I don't believe in karma or any of that shit? Karma is, of course, one of the main teachings of Buddhism. I think what she was saying is, I don't believe in feeling like my karma is limiting me. And I don't want you to feel like, oh, this is my karma. And now this is going to happen because I've done that. Darlene's sicknesses were real in her life. I'm sure she thought at times, this is terrible. I'm all crooked and crinkled. But she never let that limit her. She continued to wear black lacy clothes, the basic priest black, right? But lacy, some see-through sheer items, I've heard, from antique stores, saying with her whole body, don't let these beliefs stifle your life. So this is, you know, we're hobbled by our karma, by our dislikes, by our desires, our grasping, by our confusion, by our being consumed with, you know, oh, I'm so bad or I'm so good, you know, our own ego states. And that's never going to go away completely, but don't let it limit you. You know, like when you find yourself limiting yourself, think of Darlene and go, yeah, man, I don't have to limit myself. In this koan, someone challenges her too. Well, here you are, teacher, in this real situation. What do you believe now? What do you rely on now? And Darlene says that she values skillful means above everything, and she's willing to lie if necessary. Darlene did lie when she was younger to tease someone or to get her way. But when she became a teacher, she felt that responsibility. Her reasons for lying shifted. And it became about how to be most helpful, even in her relationships with students. If you want to call this lying, she would say, okay, my students can think I'm wonderful. See, even a teacher knows they're not wonderful, but like, they can still like go, if my students need to believe that, I'll let them deal with that for a while. I'll fake them out for a while. She said, but you know, sometimes I might need to go home and climb into bed and eat chocolate chip cookies and not come out for a few days. They don't need to know everything about me. They can still call me their teacher. And Leslie ends with these words, it's hard to believe that such a life force is gone. And yet, that is what happens to us. This very unique life force that we all carry goes away. So I think Darlene's teaching was this, use it. Use it fully. Whatever you are, don't try to be me. It would be impossible. It would be impossible to be Darlene. But be whoever you are and use it to benefit others. I don't know, Bodhisattvas. It's a pretty good story. I was struck by how these Zen teachers, you know, Matsu, Buddha, Suzuki Roshi, Darlene, they just can't seem to stop teaching, even in their death. You know, as Buddha was dying, it's said that he encouraged his students to be a light. Some call that an island, but be a light unto themselves to find their own way of realizing their light to benefit others. I was kind of struck by how Leslie's summary of Darlene's Dharma mirrors, you know, Shakyamuni Buddha's final words. You know, shine your light, be whoever you are, and use it to benefit others. This is, I think, the great teaching that is the legacy of all of our ancestors, Buddha ancestor to Buddha ancestor, known, unknown, whatever gender, you know, I don't want to be caught in a gender binary, but whatever gender, across time and place, you know. So these are the jewels that light and reflect our practice and shine on. So I'd love to hear your responses and experiences, Bodhisattva. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Hogesu. Lovely. Comments, questions, responses for Hogesu?
We actually had a reading group for a while that met every few weeks and spent an evening talking about a few stories, and I don't know what happened to that reading group. There's wonderful things about the book, but one of the wonderful things about the book is because it does have the responses to older stories of contemporary women, is you do get to know about a lot of contemporary women teachers that I hadn't heard of. So it's really, and it's such personal writing from them that you get a sense of them. So it's a wonderful source of knowledge of our larger Buddhist community, and really a great service to all of us to have it. And I'll just add that this Saturday is International Women's Day, and for the 10th year in a row, there'll be a Women's Buddhist Conference here in Chicago for all genders to attend, but every year there's a different theme, and this year we'll be focusing on Buddhist response to violence, but it'll also be a chance to get to know other people in our larger community, so I invite people to that. Seemed like an appropriate announcement.
Yeah, thank you very much, Laurel.
Yes. There's flyers up front.
And I'll just follow up on that. Again, thank you for reading from Hidden Lamp. It's a wonderful, wonderful book. I really, really recommend it. Sue Moon and Florence Kaplow are old friends. Florence was here, was it last year, the year before, and talked on a Sunday morning and talked in the afternoon. And it's really a great service. And one of the things that comes across, as you were saying, Laurel, in the case of the story about Darlene, Leslie James talks about Darlene, and there are 100 really wonderful commentaries by modern women teachers, not all Americans, many Americans, and really it becomes clear that in our modern, whatever we are, form of Buddhism, that this is a great age of women teachers, and this is a real awakening for our culture too. So anyway, I really appreciate your bringing that to us again tonight.
I think the intimacy in these stories is not any different than the intimacy that occurs in the older, like, Song and Tong koan collections and stories of people going down the road and visiting this teacher and hanging out with them and having some kind of personal interaction. You know, often people lived together, lived close, and traveled in the same circles. And so, you know, this is just the manifestation in our time and place. But also, I think this idea of skillful means, I'm kind of interested in, you know, I'm surprised nobody's like, what? She's lying? You know? I mean, that's a serious thing. You know, it's a Buddhist precept not to speak falsely. So how do we reconcile these things? How do you do that in your life?
Bo, well, did you have a comment?
No.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Comments, questions? Okay. Well, silence can also be a skillful means, but sometimes we can talk about it. Just to say a little bit about skillful means, it's traditional teaching, and I think part of what's the richness of all the old teaching stories and the newer teaching stories is to see how teachers and students help each other, how practitioners help each other to see more fully how to express this generosity. So, what do they say? By any means necessary, you know. The point is to help, the Lotus Sutra says, the Buddhas appear to help beings enter into the path to awakening. So just to be here, to be on the path. So all of you, by definition, just being here tonight, are on this path to awakening. And then whatever helps. So, and the truth of reality, you know, in some sense, that's our practice, is to see that. But in another way, each one of us has a different view of the Buddha in the middle of the room. So we all have different ways of seeing it. Yes, Kitty.
Thank you so much for your talk. How did you decide which talk to talk about in the 100 stories? I would imagine that would be a difficult decision. Maybe it was obvious for you, but did you think about that at all, what to choose?
Of course, I thought about it.
Maybe it was just so obvious.
No, nothing's ever obvious. Whenever I'm supposed to, when I'm invited to give a talk, I'm always like pondering what would be helpful to people. And, you know, of course, I have to go on a limb with that, right? Because you don't know. Sometimes people are like, I don't want to hear that. No, those women, forget it. Or, you know. But I also thought it was also to kind of share some of the legacy. You know, we're very connected to San Francisco Zen Center, and this is our tradition, and this is our living tradition. And it's really, you know, these are the people who have made it possible for us to be here in some ways. They're a great effort. I also thought it was a little bit of an homage to Zen teachers, that it's a tough job, I think, and I really feel grateful for the people who have been so generous to teach me, and what a toddler I can be at times. So I wanted to share that, I think.
So just in terms of our particular lineage from San Francisco Zen Center, in Tassajara, where Leslie James is, you know, there are other people who come in to teach practice periods, but she's always there. She's the practice leader. We have amongst various national organizations, and actually international organizations that we're connected with, Laurel and Paula are going to be going in May to a meeting of Branching Streams, which is many affiliated centers around the and city groups around the country who are connected with the San Francisco Zen Center lineage. So I was thinking, as we were talking, about Joan Amaral, who I think will be there, who's was a successor of Darling,
mm-hmm.
and is now in Massachusetts. So maybe you'll meet her.
I think I met her at the last one.
Oh, maybe so. Yeah. She's also quite a lively spirit.
She's great. Yeah. She's at, you know, Tassajara when I was there.
Huh.